Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world. Welcome back to the FV English podcast after a two-month break for the English summer, and I'm very pleased to say that I'm here today with somebody that is undisputedly a legend in Venezuelan football, although for a foreign audience, you may regrettably have not heard his name. I am joined today by Cheche Vidal, somebody who I can only introduce with a list of accolades: an Olympian, the Venezuelan Footballer of the Year at the age of 20, the founder of FIFA.com, involved in the organization of three World Cups, the founder of the Players Union in Venezuela, the founder of the Association of Venezuela's Olympic Athletes, and amongst all of that, and amongst the playing career, managed to fit in time to study for a bachelor's and a master's degree. I will stress, whilst during his playing career. It is my honour to welcome Cheche Vidal to the podcast. Cheche, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jordan. It's a true pleasure, actually, to talk to you. And I don't have much to say after that introduction. The only thing I have to say to you is that I grew up in a country where soccer players had to be something else in order to actually be able to be a soccer player. And all my idols were engineers or doctors. So it's, you know, you had to study while you were actually playing the game.
Yeah, and when I first came across your name and I was just reading up about you and your career in football and then your post-career, which is, you know, to the wider world, probably more notable or something they know more about, I was struck by the amount of parallels that there are with somebody else in Venezuelan football that I really admire, Richard Páez. You both started out at Estudiantes de Mérida. You're both, aside from football, you know, degree holders and further educational holders. And also at the same time in the development of Venezuelan football, you found yourself fighting against a status quo that didn't want to be or wasn't acting as professional as perhaps the players that it had the ability to meet the level of. And to me, it was then when I first spoke to you in detail the other week, no surprise that you and Richard are actually really good friends.
Yeah.
What was the reality of a Venezuelan footballer in the late 70s and 80s?
It was... First of all, let me start by just describing Richard. To me, is like an older brother. When I came into the game in 1978-79, he was already the player of Venezuela. I mean, him, Luis Mendoza was before him, and he was the sort of like the star after Luis Mendoza. So when I actually play with them on the national team, they were my, you know, Luis actually played with me in Deportivo Italia, and then Richard, who I met actually playing against, because when I debuted in Estudiantes de Mérida, he was playing with the other team, with Ula. So we were, you know, we had been seeing each other since I'm a teenager, although he grew up in... He was originally from Maracaibo, but he grew up in Mérida. And the reality of soccer at that time for a Venezuelan was really, really hard. I grew up not knowing that. I grew up because my father was also a player, and he was a player of one of the first ever soccer players from the area of Guayana that made into the national team. My father was born in, I like to give him a hard time all the time and say that he was born in the jungle. He was born in Ciudad Bolívar and grew up in Puerto Ayacucho. That was actually probably a town that were just starting to conquering the Amazon on the Venezuelan side. So he actually came to Caracas to go to school and then ended playing soccer and made the Venezuelan national team very fast. And then after that, he went on to become an official with both the league and then with the federation, all the way to the presidency of the federation. So I grew up with a father figure and seeing him playing. And, you know, while seeing him playing at that time, there was no professional as such. So everybody around him were, you know, people that went on to become ministers or, you know, big shots in Venezuelan politics or civil life in those times. So those were my original role models. So to me, playing soccer without an education was really, really hard to see. Then, having said that, at the age of 16, I started being attracted by professional teams, started calling me. By the age of 17, I did the test with, it wasn't a test. They wanted me to go to move to Mérida, to enter the Mérida. And then I had there, Estudiantes de Mérida was actually a team where the Criollos, starting with Richard Páez, were studying medicine and, you know, careers like medicine, career, you know, him and many other ones, and lawyers and engineers. And so for us, because we knew that, you know, it was hard to make the right amount of money, or because the profession was not known, you had to literally go in the direction also of education. So there was not a choice when I was there. Then when I went back to, you know, Caracas a year later. I was playing with Deportivo Italia. I was named Venezuelan Soccer Player of the Year. At that time, I was already obviously being considered at that stature, I considered very seriously to pursue a career only as a soccer player. I started getting offers from all over the world. And when I went to negotiate my third season, it would be Estudiantes Media, the first one, the second one with Italia, to just open that season. When I went to negotiate the deal with the owner of the team, I had actually consulted with Brazilian players, and they told me that in Brazil I would be making tons of money, like I should deserve to be paid by, you know, there in Venezuela. At least they told me to be paid like them. So I actually went in and actually asked the owner to pay me the same amount of money that they were paying to the Brazilians, because it was regulated almost. You know, everybody was paid the same amount if you were a foreigner. And the immediate answer from the owner was, you will never be paid as a foreigner. Venezuela would never be paid that way. And I stand that up, left. And then I went and talked to another teammate of mine from Caracas, who was older, that I thought, okay, he can tell me, you know, if the amount of money I can pursue are feasible. When I'm thinking of, I could be an engineer, I could be something else, but I'm the player of the year, I should be paid accordingly. But I want to know how Venezuela is being paid. So when I asked him, he actually told me an amount that was even half of what I was making before. So I decided that there was no way in the world that I could stay in Venezuela, continue a career as a soccer player, and aspire to be, you know, just a soccer player. So I considered going. I had offers at the time from Brazil, from Spain, and several other countries. And something very rare happened there anyway, that I ended in the United States from what I'm talking to you. So the point is, to your question, it was a really harsh reality to play as a player, as a Venezuelan player. If you stayed and playing, it was because you were at that level that I was already, but you were in an environment that allowed you to go very slowly in your academic career. That only happened at that time in Mérida. And that's why you see a lot of the players from Mérida, because they were going to university and that was allowed. Most of them collected their own academic rewards. Later on, you saw that in Caracas, but at that time it was only there. So it was way too harsh for me, and I decided to go on a different route. But I swear to myself that I will come back to try to fix a lot of the problems I was seeing and confronting as a player then.
And it feels from then to today, there's a lot of parallels in the situation that players find themselves in, but for perhaps for different reasons when it comes to, you know, collecting their salaries that they're contracted for or earning the money that they deserve. Even though you've left Venezuelan football and then returned and left again, you've always stayed involved, even from a distance, trying to help, be it with like your digital projects, if you like, your technological projects to aid football, or whether it's been founding the Players Union and founding the Olympic Athlete Union as well. In that time from, say, 1980 to now, so a period of 40 years, has there been a point where Venezuelan football and the professionality and the attitude that was persisting improved and it's happened to have slumped down again? Or do you look at today's football and think, we've made no progress in 40 years?
No. There's definitely progresses. It depends on the era you speak. For example, when I left originally, it was literally 1980, right after the Olympic Games. And that decade was literally the worst decade, because what happened was pretty much what's happening today. The Venezuelans started running out of money and there was no money to invest in the league. And what they did is they made it more Venezuelan, meaning they got more players from Venezuela. They went from teams that had at the very least 8 foreign players and 3 Venezuelans to exactly the opposite, to 8 Venezuelan players and only 3 foreigners. But they kept the number of the teams. At that time, I think it was between 12 and 14 or 16. I don't remember much the number. So they kept it at an absolutely wrong number, but they didn't grow too fast. And so soccer, actually, at that time, you can see that in the results, when it started going down, because the competition, the competitiveness of the top competition suffered. So before, the Venezuelans that got, we were actually to be the best of the best. Otherwise, you couldn't make it, because you had to pay for foreigners. So then, you know, a lot of people was allowed to come in, so they weren't as competitive, and soccer didn't become as competitive. And again, they were not being paid the right amount of money. But then came in 2003, and the Copa America actually came in to happen, and oil went booming. So there was a lot of money, and then a lot of interest on bringing soccer to the light. And those years were also happening when Richard went on to become a coach. By the way, I decided to become an official rather than a coach. Richard went the route of the coach. I went the route of the officials. That's where I went to World Cups, and I want to, you know, trying to organize the Players Association, et cetera. And I even ran for the presidency of the Venezuela Federation when I came back from the United States. So that year, those 2000, I decided to go back and run for the presidency of the Federation. At the same time, Richard was actually going after the coaching career. So what happened then was, obviously, I tried to run. I couldn't run because the election was practically stolen. I mean, you couldn't even be part of it. You were not allowed to become part of it the way that was designed. So, but then Copa America comes out and is organized in Venezuela. There is an influx of money from everywhere. Plus, as I was saying, the oil economy exploded, and there was a lot of investment in Venezuelan soccer. So they were investing a lot of money, but they also enlarged. So there was more money, but to more people. So it was not really the quality investment. I couldn't be part of the, I tried to run for the Venezuelan presidency. By the way, it was the 3 of us from the FIFA world tried. Sunil Gulati in the United States, Harold McNichols in Chile, and myself in Venezuela, the 3 amigos trying to run for presidencies. And the only one who didn't make it was me. So they all made it in, and they had incredible seasons with the federations. Anyway, so I couldn't, I lost, and I was not able even to go to the games in Copa America. That's how bad it got. I mean, that's a whole different show. I mean, it's like what I went through in those years was amazing, because Venezuela was going through a political mayhem, and also soccer mayhem, because the investment that came in through Copa America was huge. It was in the billions of dollars for the event. So soccer never saw so much investment. So that decade from 2005 to 2015, that I was going the official side, the route, while Richard was going on the coaching side. Richard, by the way, we had organized a movement called Football Mejor, that Richard was part of it. And Richard ended up being this head coach of the Venezuelan national team because he was part of that movement. And the president of the federation, in order to sort of like divide our movement, tried to bring him into this challenge that for the president of the federation, it was about killing Richard, because, you know, he was going to lose everything. And Richard just changed the whole image, the whole history of La Vinotinto with that experience. And the frame was that investment of money and also investment of money on advertising and publicity to the Vinotinto that had no ever seen that before. Actually, the name Vinotinto was coined in that decade because of the struggle they had in between PDVSA, representing the actual government influx, and Polar, who was until then the main sponsor. So they were investing so much money and also so much publicity that whole Venezuela united behind for first time of the national team. And then Richard was giving the results with the national team. But at the same time, the investment went into the league. But they enlarged the model of the league from 15 teams, or from 12 teams that it started, all the way to 21 teams, which was exactly the worst formula you can actually imagine when you are finally going to get investment into the game. So what happened that decade is that players in Venezuela were being paid, and were being paid exuberant, I mean, crazy numbers sometimes. There were players in a league that didn't even have an average of 2,000 to 5,000 players and fans per game. There were being players at being paid $300,000 a year, and they were being paid on time, but it was completely exogenous. There was completely, the model was completely wrong. But because so much quantity, some quality came out. And that's why you have that decade also the best results. It's just the conjunction of a lot of money, not organized, but then you had people like Richard doing the right things, taking advantage of the right players at the right moment. And that's why that decade is so different, because the frame was very different. And that meant an incredible amount of money, but it was wasted. And that's what you're seeing today. The league grew up so much. Not only the league, is the second division and the third division. The whole infrastructure was grown in a way that there was no way in the world that you have to have unlimited amounts of money to actually continue that model. And so what you're seeing today is that we went back to the past with an even worse model. And savvier people, though. There are some people today that are actually at the league as professional, as actually owners, that rather than being owners, are more good managers with good ideas. It's just the wrong model, the wrong roles. I don't know how to put it up without being impolite, so I better leave it there. So. And the bottom line is that what you had, and just to summarize the answer, you had sort of like decades of, you know, of a lot of money invested, but never optimizing the model. So what has happened is you have good times based on the fact that there was so much money invested, and then the bad times continue to be reminding us of the past because of how the model has been abused. And, you know, they need to literally re-engineer the model. And the way they have re-engineered is always to go wrong. I mean, there was something I said 40 years ago when I retired. I said Venezuelan soccer should be let to die so it can be restarted as a corporation, as an enterprise, but with knowledge, with people that understand how to do that. The problem is that Venezuelan soccer dies every season, and they restarted it even in a worse model than the one before. And the last, since the Copa America to here, has been like the most irresponsible way of managing the game that I've ever seen. I mean, there's so much money, yet the model has been completely wrong. So that's the reason why you see the issues today. There was money involved before. There was not as much money involved. Today you have TVs, you have everything you need, but it's really badly, is misuse, and that's really the problem.
And today, like what, this season, this year, in recent times, do you still watch Venezuelan football? And if you do, how do you feel about the game at the moment in its current state, its current level, and even perhaps its current organization? Both the league and the federation in the past 12 to 18 months have, you know, new directors, has a new face, is it, as it were?
Yeah. In terms of the actual game itself, I see the quality of the actual soccer being played decrease because of what I've explained to you. There's too many teams, and so therefore it's very bad. It's very hard to build a competition that it actually enhances its playing level, because there are teams that are, you know, with very they're not as competitive as they should be. When you have 21 teams in a country as small as Venezuela, you're really hurting the competition. So the level of the game has decreased on a day-to-day basis. But there are clubs that are actually probably not only same stand of the best teams of the past, probably even better. But they happen to be a minority in the league. And that's the problem. Instead of bringing everybody up, they have actually brought everybody down for that particular problem. So that's the first issue. The second issue, I think, within all this investment, the first thing that it grew was the professionals around the game, meaning journalists, trainer, coaches. I mean, the new kids actually that went into the game, professional from the side to build an industry, is fantastic. And so much that there are so many out that left the country and are all over the world doing, you know, first level markets. They're working in great markets doing what they were doing in Venezuela. So that is there. The second thing is the new federation. The new federation, it's way too new to actually measure them, but they have, what I have seen is they have some good ideas. I've seen them acting with more professionalism than I saw before, but the whole model needs to be reaffirmed, needs to be studied, needs to be refined. Because a federation is one thing, the league is another thing. Right now, you don't really finish to understand if the league is dependent or is actually working under the federation, and the federation is trying to do too much, or the league is trying to do too much. So there are some things in there that need to be reassessed to actually go forward with the right path. And one point on that. I think they actually did what it could be considered a good the federation, the new leadership at the federation, they did what could be considered a good first step when you talk about a coach. And you bring a coach of, you know, of as incredible reputation as the one you have right now. The problem I have with that is, number one, that they are trying to offer a new image of transparency and all these issues. And the bottom line, there's no transparency about how they brought this coach and the new big team to convert the Vinotinto in the team of the, you know, that's going to qualify to the World Cup. So that's the first issue. The second issue is obviously to bring somebody of that reputation, you needed a lot of money. And if you're investing a lot of money in one coach and money is not going to the players and the league and the competitiveness of the league, then there's not going to be a coach trying to do anything unless we put the whole responsibility on, you know, bringing every player from Venezuela to play in every league possible. So this coach has, you know, the players that are playing in foreign leagues to make sure that Venezuelan soccer, the national team, goes somewhere, but Venezuelan soccer is not going anywhere. And so that is a discrepancy. I see things in there that are going to be hard to solve. They're divorcing the reality of the national team with the reality of soccer in the country. And that's another issue that has me worried.
Yeah, sort of how you sort of summarize that and how you describe that sort of reminds me a bit of what happened in Panama about 10 years ago, when a lot of their players were getting moved out of Panama to Europe or to the US. And the sort of the philosophy behind the thinking was, even if these players aren't playing much minutes overseas because of their level, they're benefiting from higher facilities, they're benefiting from better coaching, they're benefiting from playing alongside much better players. When they then report to national team duty, hopefully the level of the national team will be higher. And ultimately it did lead to Panama qualifying for the World Cup, which is something Venezuela's still not done. But then you look at the level of the Panamanian league and it's still arguably of a lower level than Venezuela, because you have still to this day players that do very well in Panama and their next step up is sometimes Venezuela. You look at Alfredo Stevens at Puerto Cabello, who came to Aragua last season, or Freddy Gondola, who went to Yaracoyanos and Deportivo Táchira and now is in Costa Rica. Like, and you know, 5-6 years ago, Gabi Torres, like the best Panamanians have used Venezuela as a stepping stone. The Panamanian number one goalkeeper at the moment, Orlando Mosquera, is at Carabobo. So you can almost look down on Panama in a way, because they're seeing Venezuela as a step up, but the approach to the national team is perhaps somewhat similar. What the Federation have done with the national team, like you said, it is in a way something that we can be positive about, particularly with the early successes of the youth ranks of the national team since Peckerman took charge of the whole scenario and put his own people in charge. And the Toulon tournament, the Venezuela's debut participation in that competition, ending in a runners-up medal, was something that has had measurable success already. We've seen John Aramburu go to Spain, to Lasco Segovia, to go to Sampdoria and Serie A. And what I'd be interested to know is, with all your very valid criticisms, and I thank you for being so honest with them, at the end of the day, 40 years on, you are clearly still in love with football and obviously still think very fondly of Venezuelan football. So there's something that keeps you coming back and something that keeps you tied to football. What are your fondest memories of football, and what are your fondest memories of your involvement with Venezuelan football?
Okay, but let me make a couple points about, because I'm actually very fond of the Panamanian example. I even know the coaches right now in Panama. The difference is Panama is placed in CONCACAF, and you bringing the players out to get experience, to get to this, you can make the difference lower in between United States, Mexico, and Panama if the players go somewhere else. And they didn't bring a coach that cost as much to the federation as what you have today in Venezuela. Now, you can make the case that you need a coach for that amount of money in order to actually get the distances this high, bringing the players all over the world. That's issue one. Issue two, Venezuela comes, if something was good that was happening before, as a byproduct of that miscalculation of the model, you had quantity of Venezuelan players. You had, they popularized so much, they did the massified professional soccer. So young kids were coming up and being tested at the high level. So Venezuela had a generation of young players that proved to the world that they could be the world champion of the world. I mean, they were second in the world just, you know, 5 years ago. So what you needed is a league that tested them, that bring them more competitive there. That investment should be there. And that's why I wanted to conclude, because it was a fantastic comparison with that one of Panama. And I do believe it's doable. Now, I mean, I hope, for God's sake, I hope that this bet that the Federation did on the coach works for not only them, but also for Venezuela. Now, what brings me back? It's the love of the, you know, the, I'm actually writing a book about competition, about fair competition, and how competition is what, you know, is our first school for looking for excellence. I grew up learning to look for my excellence as a human being in anything I chose, in the grounds of Venezuela playing that game. So the fact that I can actually still help improve the game in Venezuela, and for that sake, in the United States as well, that is my second, right now, my first nation, my first country, I will do my best because, you know, there's so much. I mean, first of all, I have my family in Venezuela, but then I have friends that are like family. They're all involved in the game. And when I suffer when I see the kids getting into that industry in Venezuela, and, you know, I just want to make sure that I can help, if I can, I contribute to making that game better, for a better academy of excellence for any Venezuelan as possible anywhere. And that's, I think, what will keep me fighting for Venezuelan soccer until the day I die. It's just to make sure the kids in Puerto Cabello, in Valencia, in San Cristobal, in anywhere, have the opportunities I had to go, you know, to the top of the world as I have gone, thanks to what I did. And that's why I want the best league for Venezuelans, and I want the best soccer. To me, it's not just the importance of the Venezuelan national team qualifying to the World Cup, which I think it would be amazing. But you can't do that if you don't have an industry, a league that works, that make kids competitive, makes them proud, makes them, you know, makes them feel that they can go around the country saying, I'm a professional soccer player. That to me is meaningful. And by the way, includes the education, which is something that I think is lovely of the Venezuelan soccer.
Yeah, no, it was curiously just yesterday with the new football agency I'm working with here in Venezuela, we were talking about the importance of education in football players' careers. And often in England, and I talk of England as obviously it's my background, it's often seen that education needs to be sort of sacrificed on the path to professionalism because of the sheer amount of time, particularly with the popularity of the 10,000 hour rule. If you're going to hit 10,000 hours of purposeful practice by the time you're 16 or 18, that means from the age of 4 or from the age of 6, you're playing football or practicing football 16 hours a week, every week, from the age of infancy. That's a part-time job on top of a full-time education. And, you know, this is what we're asking of kids and teenagers. And then sadly, in the past maybe 20, maybe even longer years in Venezuela, a lot of the kids aren't just thinking school or football. They're also thinking school, football, or how do I support my family, or how do I contribute to the family household? So there's a lot going on for young players in Venezuelan football. And I only hope that the changes in the past 12 to 18 months with the sort of professional facelift that they're trying to give from under 13s upwards proves to be meaningful rather than cosmetic.
Yeah, it's very important, a point that you just brought up also there. When you are in a country like the England and you make it into the professional ranks as a soccer player, you can, and then let's say, for example, you only have 2 years of actual playing career, 2 years. If you just made a 2 years of playing career at the professional level, you sacrifice a career. You still have the money and the actual life presence that you can continue into your life. If you lose that in places like Venezuela, I mean, education is so meaningful because at the end of the ball game, if you end with an average career of 2-5 years of soccer player, and you have no education the rest of your life, but from the 25 on, you're going to see nothing but poverty. So we're manufacturing poverty through it. And so we need to understand that, you know, we can't do what England does. We have to give them education and, you know, empower them to go after the best life possible. I mean, it's like, you know, every player that makes it to the pros should actually have a secure bank account so they can continue their studies when they finish school, at least something like that, you know, that we can do in countries like that. But it's just about, it's like going to the army, you know, you secure a future. And that's how you're going to get the best players of all. And that's what I believe on. That's what we have to, you know, we can't create soccer leagues just for the sake of fans. It has to be first for the sake of the players and the country and make them, you know, the best possible players and the best possible officials and the best possible, make that a gem. That is what has to be done before the national team. That is really most important because that's really the future of the country. Anyway. I'm probably going too far, too passionate about it.
No, not at all. I really appreciate the passion. Sometimes there's people that are willing to speak with such passion, speak with such honesty, but not in a public sphere. So to have it here is really valuable, and I really appreciate it.
JJ, this is so important, Jordan. Let me just finish with one point. This is so important. It doesn't matter how many good clubs you have. When you don't have a good competition, they all die. So that's why this is so important. This is the foundation. This is the secret. It's not having the best vino tinto. It's having the best possible league.
Yeah. You can't play football if there's no one to play with.
Yeah. That's why the Premier League in England can produce the effect you talk about. Because they generate the most amount of money of any league in the world. They have the funds to make sure the kids are, you know, can go for a good future.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking time to speak to us. I really do appreciate it. And hopefully we can, in one way or another, have you back on Football English in the future, be it with our Twitter threads, which you always support, thank you, or on another podcast at a later date, hopefully to talk about a good result or the qualification for the World Cup or the league making a great stride. It would be great to have you back.
And that would be fantastic.
Something positive for us to praise.
Yeah. And I appreciate what you're doing and keep it up. I mean, we need more like you around the world looking at this.